click on the BCFM Radio website today for a special 25% discount.
Well, I think up until the year 2000, what we had is an economy which was expanding, and it was purposely done that way, where we were all working to build up a large nest egg, which they knew long in advance they were going to harvest and take away from us. And that's basically what's happened since the year 2000. Now the economy's going down because they're slowly taking the cream off of the top. And, you know, in 2008, there was a large, you know, harvesting right there in one chunk. And probably we're going to see something like that again.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. The Mirandi Bridge in Genoa, where's the CCTV? Did it really collapse or was it blown up? Are we even allowed to ask? So you think you couldn't be hoodwinked by the entire media? Working in concert to ignore vital facts we all need to know? Think again. The economic wars, not just between Trump and Erdogan and President Xi. What about the war raging between Brussels and Rome? The London corporate media hardly mention it. So, who chooses Italian governments? The Italian voters or Goldman Sachs and Mario Draghi at the European Central Bank? Also, the death of an Israeli terrorist who fought the British Mandate in the 1940s. He turned a peace activist and died believing the 1990s Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat was poisoned by the Israeli state with polonium, the Jewish terrorist who sided with the Palestinians. And as the FBI and others move maybe to impeach US President Donald Trump, he explains to Fox News why he thinks his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, has been making scurrilous accusations about him. And we, in our series Getting to Know the Israeli Cabinet, this week the foreign minister, who is he or she? And what have they been saying this week? Plus, Martin Summers takes us on a tour of the world's hotspots, places the mass media have turned a blind eye to. Our sister show Dialects here on BCFM 93.2 at noon every Tuesday. Catch it online now at dialectradio.co.uk. This week, the inside story of Bristol Friends of the Earth's Clean Air campaign about hundreds of premature deaths in the city, which caused such consternation in Bristol City Hall. They ordered the city's only non-commercial billboard with that information on it removed. And Scotland's Fresh Start Foundation for survivors of child sex abuse the authorities won't listen to. That's Dialect on BCFM at noon next Tuesday. Or download it from dialectradio.co.uk. Now, if you like. So first of all, Martin, we're going to have a look at Trump, I think, to start with. I mean, we're going to have a look, I suppose. This is looking really, I suppose, at geopolitics generally, which is who really runs things and to what extent the deep state is running things. And these politicians are just there sort of, you know, for the public and the media to talk about, almost like a kind of puppet show.
Well, that's pretty accurate. What in particular are we discussing in relation to the Donald?
Well, this is about whether, you know, what might be going on with all these accusations against Trump. Is the idea to put political pressure on him one way or another?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Democrats are hoping to take the House and the Senate in November, and then they're hoping to use this fact that these women were paid off by Trump to impeach him. But I think that's delusionary on their part. It's clutching at straws. Trump's support doesn't care if he paid these women off. They're not bothered. And you could argue that they ought to be, but they aren't.
So, I mean, it doesn't matter. You can break the law with impunity, can he?
Well, yes. I mean, it's all politics. I mean, ultimately, if Trump loses the political support of sufficient political support, he'll be impeached. But those who are impeaching him, of course, even if he was impeached, Mike Pence takes over, who's an even more paleo-conservative than Trump. So it doesn't change anything. And in actual fact, Trump's tried to do stuff which the deep state doesn't like rapprochement with Russia, he's basically been outmaneuvered anyway. I mean, the more sanctions on Russia have just been agreed, whatever Trump thinks. So, I mean, Trump basically is not really in charge. Putin is in charge in Russia, so there's an asymmetry there. In the West, the people you see aren't the ones in charge, and that's not the case in Russia.
Anyway, the Fox News presenter Ainsley Earhart interviewed Donald Trump this week. Here's a little clip from that as he explains what he thinks really going on with Michael Cohen, his lawyer.
Michael Cohen had, I guess, a taxi business, and somebody reported him for some things in his taxi business, and that's how this started. And they put the two counts of campaign violations in there, but a lot of lawyers on television, and also lawyers at IFC, that they're not even crimes.
If you're saying the payments, if they're not illegal, then why would he use that information for a
plea
deal?
Because he makes a better deal when he uses me, like everybody else. And one of the reasons I respect Paul Manafort so much is he went through that trial. You know, they make up stories. People make up stories. This whole thing about flipping, they call it. I know all about flipping. For 30, 40 years, I've been watching flippers. Everything's wonderful, and then they get 10 years in jail, and they flip on whoever the next highest one is, or as high as you can go. It almost ought to be outlawed. It's not fair, because if somebody's going to spend 5 years like Michael Cohen, or 10 years, or 15 years in jail because of a taxicab industry, because he defrauded some bank, the last two were the tiny ones. You know, campaign violations are considered not a big deal, frankly. But if somebody defrauded a bank and he's going to get 10 years in jail or 20 years in jail, but if you can say something bad about Donald Trump and you'll go down to 2 years or 3 years, which is the deal he made, in all fairness to him, most people are going to do that. And I've seen it many times. I've had many friends involved in this stuff. It's called flipping, and it almost ought to be illegal. You get 10 years in jail, but if you say bad things about somebody, in other words, make up stories, if you don't know, make up stories. They just make up lies. Alan Dershowitz said, compose, right? They make up lies. I've seen it many times. They make up things, and now they go from 10 years to they're a national hero. They have a statue erected in their honor. It's not a fair thing, but that's why he did it. He made a very good deal. I mean, for what he did.
So it's Donald Trump there, at least attempting, Martin, to explain why he thinks that Michael Cohen has been spilling the beans about his private affairs. Actually, this is really all about a case where Donald Trump's lawyer was involved in some kind of fraud to do with the New York taxis, I believe, or Washington taxis.
Well, I mean, who can get to the bottom of all of this and who can follow it all? The politics of it are fairly clear. The Trump is being attacked by his political enemies within the establishment in the US, and they're using any mechanism they can to try and catch him out. And of course, he was bankrupt several times and rescued by the mafia and other unsavoury people, so he's got plenty of skeletons in the cupboard. But the fact of the matter is that it's the people trying to get him are equally criminal. So we're talking about a criminalised ruling class in the US, as Donald Trump just sort of seen these flippers all the time. He's been involved in dirty deals all his life, but then he's not the only one. They all are.
So it's basically tax fraud to do with these taxi companies in New York, actually. But what's happened is there's been a plea bargain. So this is a way, I suppose, that they can say, well, if you say this and say this, then you're going to get a lesser sentence. Now,
that's what Trump is suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty clear that he's correct about that. That's why Michael Cohen has made these statements about Trump, because he doesn't want to spend so much time in jail.
Well, that may be so, and I think the fact is that Trump, that the people who are attacking Trump are often attacking him for the wrong reasons, and the things that they're attacking him for are either trivial or I mean, you know, I mean, if Trump paid off these women not to spill the beans about his love life, well, that's pretty reprehensible in one way, but in another way, it's pretty standard for US politics. And it's not, and anybody who voted for Trump isn't going to change their mind about him on that basis. And we'll have to see which way this plays out. If the Democrats win the Senate and the Congress, but the Congress are more likely to win, then you may see impeachment about anything coming forward against Trump. But, I mean, as I said earlier, even if Trump was impeached, you just get Mike Pence, which is more of the same anyway. And even if you got a Democrat elected, unless it was somebody really radical like Tulsi Gabbard, you're not going to get any change anyway. I mean, the system in the US is run by billionaires, for billionaires, and the Pentagon, and everything else is window dressing.
Well, moving to look at Israel now, and as I said, we'd have a look at the Israeli foreign minister. Martin, do you know who the Israeli foreign minister is?
Is it not Avigdor Lieberman? It used to be.
Lieberman is the defence minister. Who is the foreign minister?
Well, I can't...
This is a bit cruel.
Well, I don't know, is the simple answer.
It's Benjamin Netanyahu.
Oh, he's his own foreign minister.
Only prime minister. Also foreign minister. So there you go. And it saves any disagreements between him and a foreign minister, doesn't it?
Yes.
So I thought we'd have a listen now to hear. And it's actually just back a few weeks, but when the US, it's John Bolton, turned up in Jerusalem. So let's have a little listen to that now. This is Benjamin Netanyahu really setting out his stall, I suppose, and not only as prime minister, but also as foreign minister.
I believe that the president's decision to leave the disastrous Iran's deal was nothing less than a hinge of history. And Israel applauds the Trump administration's determination to reimpose tough sanctions on Iran and those doing business with Iran. I know that that view is shared by all our Arab neighbors, or practically everyone in this region. And I frankly believe that all countries who care about peace and security in the Middle East should follow America's lead and ratchet up the pressure on Iran. Because the greater the pressure on Iran, the greater the chance that the regime will roll back its aggression. And everybody should join this effort. In standing up to the regime, we stand with the people of Iran. The president has made it clear, Secretary Pompeo has made that clear, you have made it clear. And I have made it clear, too, in numerous appeals, direct appeals to the people of Iran. And it's important that the people of Iran understand that our fight is not with them. Our fight is with the regime that brutally represses them, that arrests women for uncovering their hair, that hangs gays in the public squares, that defies the aspirations for freedom of millions and millions of Iranians. Ambassador Bolton, Israel is also grateful for the Trump administration's unequivocal support for Israel in international forums and on international issues. We hear it every day in the podiums, in the White House, in the State Department, at the United Nations. This is deeply, deeply appreciated and deeply valued. We appreciate as well the continuing American commitment to maintaining Israel's qualitative military edge, which enables us to defend ourselves by ourselves against any threat. Welcome to Jerusalem. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Prime Minister, thank you very much for that warm welcome. It's a privilege.
This is John Bolton, National Security Advisor of the U.S.
in Jerusalem, Israel's capital. And I look.
Could you say that again?
Israel's capital. And I look forward to visiting the American embassy in Jerusalem that President Trump ordered some time back. I think your analysis of the issues that we have to face is right on spot target. It's a question of the highest importance for the United States that Iran never get a deliverable nuclear weapons capability. It's why President Trump withdrew from the wretched Iran nuclear deal. It's why he is reimposing economic sanctions. It's why we've worked with our friends in Europe to convince them of the need to take stronger steps against the Iranian nuclear weapons and ballistic missile program. It's why we continue to worry about Iran's role as the central banker of international terrorism. It's why we worry about Iran's belligerent military activity in Iraq, in Syria, with Hezbollah in Lebanon. and in Yemen. All of these threats in the region are also global threats because of the risk of international terrorism, and especially terrorist possible use of weapons of mass destruction.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Well, that was a little loving between Bolton and Netanyahu, wasn't it? A match made in heaven from their own point of view, and but a match made in hell from everybody else's point of view.
Talking about the wretched nuclear deal.
Yeah, well, I mean, and also Netanyahu going about the lack of freedom in Iran, unlike the lack of freedom in Saudi Arabia, of course, where everybody gets votes all the time, and the women can drive, and nobody's forced to cover their heads. It's just drivel, frankly.
It's really just about
dangerous drivel.
It's about nuclear weapons. Why should it be a good thing for the Iranians to get nuclear weapons?
Well, it's not about. They want a regime change in Iran. There's no evidence that the Iranians have nuclear weapons, and the International Atomic Energy Agency have said that they've been completely in compliance with everything that they were asked to do. And that's the position of all other countries, apart from two, the United States, Israel, and I think Guatemala and some of the smaller, small fry that have been swept up in it. Everybody else is perfectly happy with the fact that they've not got nuclear weapons. And this isn't about nuclear weapons. The Israelis want a war with Iran. That's what they want. And they want the British to fight it as well. Our ships are out there. And if the war starts, we're going to be in it. Do we want a war with Iran to help the Israelis? I think people listening to this show need to make their minds up, because if we don't, we better tell them.
So this week, Israel's Foreign Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Prime Minister, wrapped into one, was in Lithuania. And he's actually from, I believe, that part of the world. His family are, anyway.
Yeah, his name isn't Netanyahu. He's originally born in Poland, I believe, or what is now Belarusia.
Apparently his grandparents are from Lithuania.
Well, that may be so.
But anyway, so let's have a listen to what he had to say over in the... why might Netanyahu want to visit the Baltic countries, Martin?
Because it's all part of the, you know, the ramping up of the enemy. This is ramping up the enemy being Russia. At the same time, of course, he went to Moscow for the May Day, the commemoration of winning World War II parade. So he's popping to Moscow all the time, and Putin allows him to come because Putin basically wants to talk to him, even though he's a gangster. And of course, he's in Lithuania.
Well, Putin isn't.
Well, that's right, because Putin's a gangster. He wants to talk to the other gangsters. He talks to everybody. Unlike the British, you can't be bothered to pick up the phone. And that's called diplomacy, Tony.
Anyway, so let's have a listen to see what Benjamin Netanyahu, Israeli Foreign Minister and Prime Minister, had to say in Vilnius this week.
I'm deeply honored to be the first Israeli Prime Minister to visit Lithuania. I want to congratulate you on recently celebrating 100 years of Lithuania's independence. Israel is the nation state of the Jewish people. We, too, are proud of our history, our long history, our robust and pluralistic democracy, which guarantees the rights of all our citizens. We're proud of our language, an ancient language, Hebrew, revived after thousands of years, our traditions, and our historic capital, Jerusalem, to which I invite you and your colleagues. We can do better together. And I want to stress that everything, every single endeavor of human activity is becoming technology. Israel is a world leader in industries of the future, from cybersecurity to automotive driving, autonomous driving, to precision agriculture, digital health, every manner of IT, and so many other fields. Equally, I appreciate the fact that you have taken a very sober position on the question of the Iran deal. It was a terrible deal. And today, we learned that three major carriers, BA, KLM, and Air France, have discontinued their activity in Iran. That's good. More should follow. More will follow. Because Iran should not be rewarded for its aggression in the region, for its attempts to spread terrorism far and wide, in the Middle East, into Europe, as they did the other week, and to many other places in the world. Vilnius was known as the Jerusalem of Lita, Jerusalem of Lithuania. But as you know, there was also a dark chapter. The Jews of Lithuania were almost entirely wiped out in the Holocaust by the Nazis and their collaborators. And Mr. Prime Minister, you have taken great steps to commemorate the victims of the Holocaust, to speak openly about this horrible crime that must never be repeated. And I want to thank you for your commitment to fighting anti-Semitism wherever it rears its ugly head.
Well, that's quite interesting because, of course, during the German occupation, the right wing in Lithuania collaborated with the Holocaust. So that's a rather pointed remark at the end by Netanyahu. And, of course, the whole thing about Israel being a state as old as Lithuania, well, that's just not true. I mean, the state of Lithuania has been there a long time, although it was absorbed into the Soviet Union. It used to be Poland, Lithuania, and there used to be a massive country.
You're talking about 100 years or 50 years of independence.
Yes,
and actually, it wasn't really independent from the Soviet Union.
Well, it was absorbed into the Soviet Union from World War II until the 1990s. So there was a period of a non-independence. But they got independence as a result of the Russian Revolution, because they were part of the Russian Empire before that.
What about British Airways, KLM and Air France stopping flights to Iran? He's celebrating.
Well, that's what's happening. Is that the plan is that come November, all Iranian oil will be embargoed and they won't be able to export any oil at all. But what the Iranians are saying, well, in that case, everybody else's oil is going to be embargoed. And I read an interesting thing this week, which I didn't know, that the only navigable bits of the Straits of Hormuz are entirely within Iranian territorial waters. So if they choose to close the Straits of Hormuz, they'll be absolutely within their rights to do so.
Looks like another plate spinning, ready to fall, doesn't it?
Well, the danger is that there's going to be a miscalculation and it will end up in war. And I say to the Israelis, if you go to war with Iran, even with the support of the Israelis, of the Americans, you ain't necessarily going to win.
It's not necessarily a miscalculation. A lot of the time, if we look at history, these wars have been deliberately kicked off.
Well, I think we need to concentrate our minds on the possibility of war here. The thing that's preventing war is the calmness of the Russians, for example. There's a massive military exercise going on in the Baltics at the moment, the biggest one ever. And the Russians are just...
By NATO, you mean?
Yes, and the Russians are just watching with their arms folded. It's like as if they were having a massive military exercise in the Channel, and we've just got to watch it. And the same with the Iranians. They're being told that they're going to have to do this, that, and the other, otherwise... because they're calm, they're not going to overreact.
Anyway,
but if there's any miscalculation, this will end in war.
Israeli.
In Russia and in Iran.
Israeli former terrorist and turned peace activist Uri Avni died this week. Who was he?
Well, he wasn't born Uri Avni. I was reading about him. He was actually born Helmut something or other. I can't remember a German name. He was born in Germany before the war, and his family emigrated to Israel to avoid Hitler. And he was a terrorist in the underground fighting the British as a teenager. And then he became notoriously pro-Palestinian. Yep. Because he basically said, well, we took the land by force, and if I was a young Palestinian, I would feel exactly as they feel, and I understand why they feel as they do.
Anyway, let's have
very, very humane guy.
Let's have a listen to him now.
Arafat put an end to violence whenever he saw a path to peace by peaceful means. After the Oslo Agreement, until the assassination of Mr. Rabin, there was hardly any violence at all. Before the attack, our attack on Lebanon, for 11 months after the ceasefire brokered by the American diplomat Habib, for 11 months not one single bullet was shot at the northern front. Arafat was very strongly committed to achieving peace with Israel on his terms. This must be stressed.
I just wonder if on a personal level you ever talked to him about terrorism, about the need to put an end to the terrorism.
When you say terrorism, you mean Palestinian resistance, armed resistance.
You don't consider it terrorism?
I consider it terrorism like the terrorism of the Algerian freedom fighters, of the Kenyan freedom fighters, the South African freedom fighters, terrorism of Mandela, of Mbella, of Kenyatta, and two dozen other liberation fighters in the last 50 years. All liberation fights used this kind of violence, sometimes much more cruel violence than the Palestinians ever used.
That's the voice of Uri Avni, who died this week. Martin, you also believe that Arafat was poisoned with polonium.
Quite likely. And of course, because he was himself a terrorist, inverted commas, Uri Avni was very much aware of, you can't tell people who are on the receiving end of occupation and violence that they've got to be non-violent.
Anyway,
there's no reason why they should, is there?
Certainly not. Let's have a listen now to Manfred Petrisch. He's originally Swiss-German, born in Argentina, worked in the financial services industry. And I had a fascinating chat, I thought anyway, with him about this Genoa Morandi bridge collapse. But he started off by talking about the entire financial system and why actually Goldman Sachs is at war with Rome right now.
My name is Manfred Petrisch, and I run a blog since 9/11, so it's more than 17 years now. I mainly write for the German-speaking public, but also, like this year, I'm interviewed also for the English speakers.
Now, what makes you qualified to speak? What's your background?
I'm a truth seeker, and therefore I was very frustrated. The media is telling us, and I discovered, like many people, that the media isn't telling the truth about all the things that are happening, starting with 9/11. And then when you start researching all the things also in history, you find out that a lot of things are lies, that wars are started with lies, etc. And I tried to give the other side of the picture, you know. I was working for 40 years in the financial services industry. I also had a customer in the World Trade Center in the North Tower on the 26th floor, Eurobrokers. And my customer, of course, I was very worried when 9/11 happened, if they all survived or not. And well, they did, because after about 6 weeks, I made contact with them and they told me what they actually experienced. And they experienced things that are not in the official statement. They experienced an explosion before the plane hit the building. So they experienced an explosion coming out of the basement before the first plane hit their tower. And that, of course, contradicts completely the official narrative.
Okay, you've worked in the financial services industry. Many would point to that, particularly in Switzerland, as one of the biggest problems on the planet. Did you see dishonesty or honesty?
Well, I can say now that I'm retired that, of course, the finance industry is governmentally legalized theft and corruption. It's legalized by the government so that the people are robbed. What a lot of people don't understand is how actually money is created. They think that the central banks create money, but it is not. Money is created by the people taking up a credit. The procedure of getting a credit is actually the procedure of money creation. That's why our system, our financial system, is a debt-based system. By being in debt, be it a private person or a company or a whole country, is the way to control the debtor. That's how you control them. And if they can't pay, you take over all the things that they gave you as a security. That's why for a bank, the best thing that can happen is if you default. That's the best thing that can happen. That's the biggest business then.
That's interesting, isn't it, that for a long time, banks were seen to be a very important part of a country's national infrastructure. Now it's international.
The big banks are just like the big corporations. They float over the countries. They are above countries. And they don't care about national laws or any restrictions. They are just above the law, and they control the politicians, and they also make the laws through their lobby groups, and the whole system, especially in the EU, but also in America, they only take care of the big, big corporations. They don't care about it, the little people. You see, the only country that actually profited from the euro is Germany. All other countries were... You know, they made loss. And the reason is, by introducing the euro as a common currency, the Deutschmark, the strong Deutschmark, that increased the value of all the other, for the currency of all the other countries, which means that their export didn't work anymore. You see, before, the euro. All the countries had their own currencies, and they were they could control their own currencies, and they could and they were actually quite cheap in relation to the Deutschmark and the dollar. Therefore, their exports were blooming, and everybody went to Italy or Spain or Portugal or Greece for cheap holiday or for buying cheap products. That all changed when the euro was introduced, and Italy, Greece, Spain, Portugal, France, etc., they all became too expensive in as before, and therefore their export kind of collapsed. The only country that profited from the euro is Germany, because things became cheaper as under the Deutschmark. You see, Draghi, the head of the ECB, has to pump 40 billion euros every month into the system. I mean, it's like a coma patient in a hospital that is only alive because he's connected to all the life supporting system. And if you would disconnect the life supporting system, you would die. That means if the ECB decides to stop pumping in the money every month, then the euro will immediately collapse.
But the Germans said, didn't they, that this was quantitative easing, this pumping this money into the system was not allowed.
Yes, but they are doing it. The ECB is doing it since years now. You know, Draghi said it costs what it wants. We will pay for everything. You know, they're pumping money like crazy. Just like the Fed, by the way, pumping up the dollar. Germany is profiting from this whole thing. You see, the euro and the EU was created as an economic union and not a democratic union to the welfare of the EU people. It is only to the welfare of the big corporations who sell their products across all the countries and borders.
What about Italy? Because we've had elections at the beginning of this year, 2018, and then there was no government. And finally, I think it was around about June, there was a coalition set up between La Liga, which is a right wing, and Five Star, which is a left wing, but both Eurosceptic parties. So we've got an interesting situation in Italy, a Eurosceptic government, but they haven't been allowed to choose their own chief ministers, have they? So what's happening in Italy?
Well, there again, the ECB intervened into the forming of the government. That means the designated finance minister that the new government wanted to put in mentioned that he wants the ECB to cancel 250 billion euros in debt. The ECB immediately intervened and contacted the president of Italy and said, you're not going to let them take over. You have to do new elections in autumn, and in the meantime, you have to put in a technocrat to run the government. And only when the Lega and the Five Star movement backed down from this demand of 250 billion cancelling of the debt, then they were allowed to form a government. That's why it took so long between the election in March and then the forming of the government in June. So Italy is totally under the control of the ECB. And it's not the first time, because remember Berlusconi, there was a putsch against Berlusconi, and he had to step down because the ECB intervened by increasing the interest rate for the Italian government bonds. And they forced him to step down. So the ECB is constantly intervening in all the governments. And they are saying who is going to be in the government or not. The financial system says that, and not the democratic election.
No, I know you've been looking at what's happened in Genoa, this horrific Morandi Bridge collapse, and questioning as to whether that might be deliberate. Is there any evidence that the bridge did not fall by accident?
Yes, there are a lot of evidence, and I can all list them. First of all, when I saw that only video done by this guy, Daniele Di Giorgio, he is the only one who actually filmed the collapse. I mean, you can see the partial collapse. I noticed at the beginning of his video that there were two bright lights lighting up. I said, oh, that's funny, that first there is this bright light going up twice, and then the bridge collapses, or the column collapses, because the bridge was already down. I mean, the road track was already fallen. And I said, gee, that looks very much like a controlled demolition. And then I was thinking, a structural engineer from Germany, and he said to me exactly what I was thinking. And he's an expert in bridge building. And he told me, according to that video, that was never just collapsed by gravity. And the force of gravity cannot destroy a bridge in that way as it was destructed. So these light flashes that you see at the beginning of the DiGiorgio video, it doesn't look right. And then we continue. Then the media said, well, it was because of lack of maintenance and corruption, blah, blah, blah. But this is also not true, because Professor Antonio Brancisic, who is the professor for building and construction at the University of Genoa, said that this bridge, I quote him, the bridge was monitored by a pool of experts. There was never a lack of money. The bridge was continuously maintained. So this story in all the media that the bridge collapsed because lack of maintenance is not true. It was in a good state. And the company, the Autostrada d'Italia, in charge of the bridge, said that this bridge would have lasted 100 years. And therefore, this whole collapse thing because of lack of maintenance and deterioration of the material is just not true.
But they have actually shown, haven't they, photographs, pictures up close underneath the bridge where you can see it's like a whole patchwork of repairs. It does look as if it's a bit of a cowboy job.
Yeah, but every bridge. I mean, how long have the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge been standing? And there you can go and see rust. They're continuously getting rid of the rust and painting it. The same is with all the bridges across the Hudson River in New York, etc., etc. There is a constant maintenance because you have to do things. So, of course, if you are actually looking for it, you will always find something. And now they are just pushing this narrative. Then, of course, there are all the witnesses who have come forward now and said what they experienced. Like Davide Capello. He was sitting in his car driving across the bridge when he heard a huge bang, and then the bridge dropped in front of him. And then he himself fell down with his car 40 meters. And he was saved by his airbags, which opened up when he hit the ground. So that means there was first a loud explosion and then the bridge collapsed. Right? So that's one witness, but there are more. There's this guy, Piero Giorgio. He said, I was sitting with my mother in my car underneath the bridge as the surrounding lit up bright and there was a big bang. So that also confirms that first there was a big light flash and then the noise of what could be an explosion. And then he said, then a strange thing happened. My car started bouncing up and down, and I thought it was an earthquake. Well, that all this description describes an explosion. And there are more witnesses who are saying things like that. So that, how can you believe that such a complete destruction and crushing of all this concrete and steel and everything can only be caused by gravity? That's ridiculous.
Underneath the bridge, where it was railway lines. Couldn't the flashes just have been the bridge falling on the electrical pylons on the railway?
No, and I'll tell you why. You see, a short circuit of these electrical overhead wires of the railway can only cause a spark if they touch the ground. So you have to have grounding. But the bridge was on top of it. The bridge fell onto the cable and pushed it to the ground. So that means you would never see a flash because the bridge would be on top of the cable and suffocating any short circuit light flashes.
How easy is it to blow up a bridge?
It's very easy. because in many countries in Europe, like in Switzerland, Germany, and in other countries, there is a special chambers built into all the bridges which are filled with explosives. You see, all the bridges are, from design point of view, made in a way that you can destroy them. Because if there is a war, you blow up the bridge to stop the enemy from using them.
Now, hang on, because are you saying that the explosives are in there all the time, or that there is a special place you can place the explosives?
Well, both. For instance, in Switzerland, the bridges had the explosives in this special chamber, and they were only taken out about 10 years ago. But anyway, there are chambers in all the bridges by design to be filled by explosives so that when this is ignited, the bridge collapses. That's done by design because of, if there is a war, you can destroy the bridge so that the enemy can't use them.
What about the CCTV? Because you would expect that there would be quite a lot of CCTV footage showing the bridge falling.
Exactly, but they're not showing them. That's exactly the point. They've only been released 3 videos up to now from these CCTV cameras, although the whole bridge and the whole access roads to the bridge, they are full of cameras, but they've only shown us 3 videos which don't tell us anything. They don't show the axle collapse. And that is also very suspect. Because why aren't they showing us all the videos so that we can see, oh yeah, that's how the bridge collapsed? No, they're not showing them. They're hiding them. You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of the Pentagon at 9/11, because there were 85 cameras all around the Pentagon, and they haven't shown us one single CCTV footage of this plane hitting the Pentagon. We have never seen this CCTV TV footage from these 85 cameras. So also those are hidden, because then we would know the truth. And the same thing looks like it's also happening with this bridge.
Now, there's a massive tower which did collapse. Many people would say, Manfred, well, look, if the roadway collapsed by fatigue or accidentally, even though, of course, it wasn't all that heavily loaded. I mean, apparently there are traffic jams on that bridge sometimes, which make it much more heavily loaded. But if it did collapse, the roadway would then possibly bring that enormous tower down, because it would be only pulling on one side. A whole massive roadway pulling one side of the tower when the other side is gone is likely to bring it down.
Well, that's also a very a naive argument, because on the contrary, the column was so massive, it had such a massive foot, a very broad foot to stand by itself. And if the roadway would collapse, there would be less stress on the column. Less stress, because the road is gone. How can it then collapse? And you see it also in the DiGiorgio video, that the column was still standing when the road collapsed, and then the light flashes came on, and then the column collapsed. So this is how the sequence was. The sequence was, first the road will fall down, the column was still standing, then there were 2 of these light flashes, which could be the explosion, and then the column collapsed. That's how the sequence was.
Well, it wasn't the only bomb to take place in Italy, because there was also an attack on the other party that the Five Star Party are involved in. Grillo and the Five Star Party are based in Genoa, so it's right on their home territory. But right across the other side of Italy, in Treviso, near Venice, is where the La Liga had a bomb outside their offices too.
Actually, 2. You're right. There were 2. One exploded and the other one was diffused. So in my opinion, if you ask me what is actually happening and why is it happening, this is an attack by what you could call the deep state against this new anti-EU government, to kind of tell them, well, you know, if you don't follow the rules, you will have terror in your country. And we will do things like that. Because remember the Bologna attack, right? The Bologna attack, which happened on the 2nd of August in 1980, where the railway station in Bologna was blown up, 80 people died and 200 were injured. And this was blamed on the Red Brigade. And the reason was that at that time, Italy was leaning more to the left. And this was a signal that you're not going to go into the left or communist area. But actually what happened was that after a lot of research and looking into the whole thing, it was found out that the NATO secret army, the so-called stay behind army, Gladio, was behind this explosion of the Bologna railway station, plus the Italian Secret Service and the Freemason Lodge P2. They were all involved in this explosion. So this is not the first time that there was a kind of a false flag attack against the threat of a left-leaning government. Now we have more a right-leaning government. And they want to teach them a lesson and say, hey, you know, do what we say or you will have terror.
Well, there's also attempts by the new Italian government to set up a parallel currency to the euro, which was reported by Forbes magazine as being the biggest threat to the euro.
Absolutely, because, I mean, if Italy leaves the eurozone, wow, I mean, then you can definitely say the euro is gone. I mean, that's over then. That's why they're doing everything to keep Italy in the euro and in the EU, either by telling the president who has the authority to actually designate the government by going through him, or by doing these terror attacks, these false flag terror attacks, right? And that's all threats to the new government to be careful and not realize the promises they did their electors. You know, they promised a lot during the election, that's why they got elected, but they can't do them because of these threats.
So, look, let's just take a step back from this. Who could possibly have carried out such an operation?
Well, demolition experts from the military who are taught how to destroy bridges. I mean, they teach them that. There are whole groups of military personnel who are specialized in blowing up things. Every army has that. And these are recruited by the deep state or by the secret services to fulfill these operations. And then, of course, they control the narrative through the media. You see, every time one of these operations happens, there is also a media script running parallel to what is happening. You see, the media is fed the narrative parallel to what's happening so that the people are then told what to think about this event. I mean, that happened in 9/11. Only in 9/11, the script was faster than the action. Remember that? About World Trade Center 7? Where the BBC and CNN were saying that World Trade Center has collapsed, but it was still standing. That means the media script was running faster than the actual things are happening. That was a big mistake. And that's why all the big news media were saying, well, the World Trade Center has collapsed. But actually, it collapsed a half an hour later. That would be like a TV station saying, well, Bank X has been robbed. But it wasn't robbed. It was robbed and half an hour later. So how did the news people knew that it was going to be robbed? That's one of the big questions that nobody has gone after.
Most people will think, well, nobody would do such a thing, Manfred. Nobody would do such a thing to kill so many people deliberately.
All wars of the last 150 years were created by false flag operations. Going back to the Spanish-American War, where the American ship was blown up by the Americans, the harbor of Havana, to blame it on the Spanish so that they can do a war against Spain. It already started at the end of 1800. And all other wars are like that. The First World War, the Second World War, the war in Vietnam, the Gulf of Tonkin attack by North Vietnamese torpedo boats never happened. It was a complete lie by President Johnson so that he could do the Vietnam War.
No, but there's no war started in Italy.
Yes, it's not a full-scale war, but it is a war against the people. It's a war against the democracy because their wish, what they did in by electing this government, is not being fulfilled. The government can't do what it promised.
Can you tell us where we can find your commentary and your reports on the Morandi Bridge collapse online?
Well, if you Google ASR, you will probably find all my articles I've written. Or if you enter ASR and Genoa, then you will find all my articles about this event with videos and photos and what the witnesses said and what the professors said and all these things.
And finally, is there anything you want to add? Any other big things going on in the world you'd like to talk about?
Well, look what's happening with Turkey. I mean, that's a huge blackmail and a financial crisis that Trump has created because of this fairy tale that it's about this pastor that has been arrested or is under house arrest in Turkey. Well, that's a lot of b***h, isn't it? This is a huge attack against Turkey, who is a NATO member. I mean, you said before, well, people think that nothing like that would happen. But the governments, they don't care. They kill people without batting an eye. They're not human. They don't think like us. They think about power and all these things. And I mean, also, what I'd like to mention, that this week was the 65th anniversary of the putsch in Tehran against the democratically elected government of Mossadegh. I mean, I studied this very carefully. The reason was because Mossadegh wanted to take over the oil industry. You see, it was run by the British oil company. He wanted to nationalize it. You see, in 1908, this British Petroleum Company was created, which was the forerunner of BP. And it was specially created to suck all the oil wealth generated in Iran out of the country and giving the Iranians nothing for it. Nothing. They got 1% of what was generated there. And then Mossadegh came along and said in 1951, 52, we can't keep going on like that, because with the oil revenue, we could cover all the budget needs of the country and we could develop the country, etc. And then the British came along and said, well, you're not allowed to do that. But because the British government was totally in debt after the war, they went to the Americans. Because America took over the whole imperial system from the British after the war. And then the CIA and MI6 created the Operation Ajax, which was the putsch of the Mossadegh government. And they financed demonstrations in Tehran, and they corrupted all the military and politicians, etc., etc. And then he was arrested, Mossadegh was arrested, and the Shah was put into place, a puppet of the Americans and of the British. And after that, Iran became a dictatorship run by the U.S. embassy in Tehran. I actually visited this embassy. You can visit it, because it's a museum now, and you can look how an embassy, American embassy, actually functions, and it's incredible what they have. They have a whole department which can create false documents and passports and everything. They have a glass room which is made out of glass. Can you imagine that? So that you can't listen onto it. They had all these communication equipment. So what it means is that the American embassy in Tehran was the actual government of Iran. And that's, by the way, why the students ran onto the territory of the American embassy and took hostage of all the people who were working there, because they knew that it was actually the government of Iran.
Well, fascinating and very topical too. 65th anniversary of the overthrow of Mossadegh as well. But Martin, the main thing is this Mirandi Bridge. Also, there's another I came across. Luciano Goccia was in his lorry directly under the bridge. A pressure wave threw the truck driver out of his vehicle, not the falling debris. He was opening the door to get out. Then he heard an explosion. When he turned around, he was thrown through the air.
Well, in Italy, as been pointed out, there's a long history of false flag terrorism. Operation Gladio was based in Italy. Imposimato was the head of the Italian Supreme Court, wrote a book about all this that came out in 2012, and he was the investigating magistrate. It's beyond dispute that false flag terrorism is... Italy has had lots of experience of it, anyway, and it's quite possible this bridge has been blown up.
I shall put a link up to Manfred Petrisch. He's Alles Schall und Rausch, which means all smoke and mirrors. It's in German, but I'm sure you can find some way of getting it translated, and it's got lots of links, and I'll put plenty of links up on our show page at thisweek.org.uk. Fascinating insight, I think, into what we're not being told by the mainstream press. I would like to see at least some interrogation of these various facts. And I know right now in Italy there's all sorts of pressure being put on by the families of people who died to get that CCTV released. Let's see how they get on. So, time to sign off for the Murdoch News at 8 now. You'll find this show's podcast, story links, comment page, contact details at thisweek.org.uk. I'm on Twitter, at Tony Gosling. He's wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable BCFM bank holiday weekend. Do please join us for the politics show at 6 o'clock next week. God bless. And don't let the banksters, Draghi particularly, get you down.
On the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.